The Shad Olson Show. This is the SOS Radio Network. S-O-S.
Repeat after me. Capitalism is evil. Capitalism is evil. Capitalism is evil. The wealth of a nation belongs to all the people. The money of the wealthy should be given to the poor. The wealthy among us are parasites, sucking the lifeblood of the common man. This concludes today's indoctrination lesson, for the betterment of all mankind. The Shad Olson Show thanks you for your cooperation. Goodbye.
The Shad Olson Show.
What are you doing, Billy?
Oh, nothing. I'm bored with all my toys. I wish I had something new to play with.
How about Mr. Obama's half-baked oven?
Mr. Obama's half-baked oven? That sounds great.
That's right, America. New from Scamco. Mr. Obama's half-baked oven. The toy oven that's twice as much fun because it bakes in half the time. With Mr. Obama's half-baked oven, you'll get half-baked brownies, half-baked cupcakes, and with the new economic and foreign relations settings, you'll get half-baked policies that'll turn anything into a sticky mess.
Isn't that called a quagmire?
That's absolutely right, Billy. Here, we call these our Libyan surprise quagmire cakes.
This tastes doughy and disgusting. Besides, an oven is a girl's toy.
Don't be ridiculous, Billy. With Mr. Obama's half-baked oven, everything comes out according to plan. And because it's only half-baked, there's twice as much for you to swallow.
Gee, a toy like that must be really expensive.
Actually, Billy, that's the very best part. Even though Mr. Obama's half-baked oven is assembled overnight by a team of amateurs, it's still the most expensive toy of all time.
Mister, that sounds like a rip-off. I'd rather have a G.I. Joe.
Oh, I'm sorry, Billy. From now on, Mr. Obama's half-baked oven is the only toy you're allowed to buy. And since we can't pay for it all now, we'll send the bill to your children and grandchildren.
Hey, give me back my piggy bank.
Mr. Obama's half-baked oven. From the makers of Jimmy Carter's Hostage Helper and Herbert Hoover's Invisible Chicken in a Pot.
Mister, that sounds like a ripoff.
The Shad Olson Show.
Last year, I was on 120 different radio interviews, and I've got to tell you that you're the best. And I mean that sincerely. I'm not flattering you. I want a promise from you that when you have your own national television show, that you don't forget AMAC and Dan Weber and you have us on.
The Shad Olson Show.
You're a patriot, but even you're an intelligent patriot who can communicate, and that's so important.
The Shad Olson Show.
I think it might be a good idea for President Biden to call a climate emergency.
Why?
Because he can do many, many things under the emergency powers of the president that wouldn't have to go through, that he could do without legislation. Call a climate emergency.
Why?
Call a climate emergency.
Why?
Call a climate emergency.
Why?
The Shad Olson Show.
Find today's episode and previous editions of The Shad Olson Show in the podcast page at shadolsonshow.com. That's www.shadolsonshow.com. Log on now.
What should we do then?
Always and everywhere, especially for the U.S. government or one of its elected representatives, act on behalf of the core interests of the United States government. It's really super simple. So if the United States is providing
weapons,
is providing weapons to one side in a war, how is that not participating in the war?
Listen, let me just backtrack and say that you say that we're supposed to be representing the American people. I represent District Number 27. where you have millions of Cuban Americans, and I'm representing what we think. We know that we acquired peace through strength. Look at what happened in 1960. Fidel Castro and JFK.
Stop. I'm sorry. I'm not going to take the anti-communist lecture from anybody because, of course, I agree with you.
And I hope that
you're not speaking for, quote, Cuban Americans, but for all Americans, because it's not a racial question. It's a question of
national interest. I'm representing.
I guess it is just Newsflash 101 to the district in Florida, Maria Salazar's district in the state of Florida, that in reality, this is a complete SJW that somehow got herself elected into office, masquerading as a quote-unquote conservative, mouthing, support for Donald Trump and everything else. And you begin to see the dangers that happen, and this is all part of the design. This is all baked in. Kind of like Little Billy's quagmire cakes. I guess the new version of that would have to be the Ukrainian quagmire cakes. So something tells me that probably those quagmire cakes are going to be baked. They're going to be baked a lot more quickly than with an easy bake oven. But I digress. But the voters have to be realizing, if they didn't already in the state of Florida, that they've just been utterly bamboozled and hoodwinked by this woman. You hear her lurch into the minority victimization line of the brown people, and Cuban Americans understand this because, well, we're still angry at Fidel Castro and the Soviet Union. And this is where we get into this. You can say what you want about the incompetence of the establishment and the incompetence of the destruction of the entrenched bureaucracy in the American government. And I would counter with this as an example where they've just so brilliantly used this to galvanize, weld back together the two seemingly disparate parties. Just a couple of weeks ago, the two political parties were disagreeing on just about everything in regards to the, whether it was COVID policy or stuff was starting to come out about the vaccines, and then instantaneously with the arrival of this Ukrainian crisis, you have this galvanization of the establishment wings of both parties right down the center, just welded back together in, I think, insoluble fashion. And I have great concern about what this is going to mean as we head to the midterm elections. I said on Monday the Democrats had looked for all the world like they were headed to an absolutely stunning defeat on the basis of the mask tyranny and the COVID tyranny, the business lockdowns that destroyed the economy, the energy policy that gave us $132 a barrel oil, 98% of that price increase, by the way, happening prior to the Ukrainian war, the quote-unquote Russian invasion of Ukraine. Even as they try to blame everything on Vladimir Putin. They looked like they were headed to stunning defeat, but I'm very skeptical now about what is going to happen in this midterm election. The question that is going to be answered is, how susceptible is the American nation at this point to, number one, a belief in Russia as an existential threat to the United States? Number two, the obligation of the American people to somehow solving some far-flung regional crisis and regional conflict after we meddled and provocateured and antagonized and used military and other assets to really get up into Vladimir Putin's grill, so to speak. Then he responds by invading and going across the border into Ukraine. There's good argument can be made that he has fallen for this NATO trap. That regime change in Russia has been the long coveted objective of the globalists and the banking cartel, the globalist cabal. They've wanted Vladimir Putin out of the way because, as we've discussed previously, he is standing monolithically in the way of the assumption and the realization of one world government. And you've had this very complex arrangement where Russia and China have still been serving their own interests, playing this double game where especially China playing this double game where they've been mouthing and
feigning compliance with the globalist planners, the World Economic Forum, the policymakers that are in charge of this depopulation agenda, and the economic reset that is going to starve hundreds of millions, if not billions, on planet Earth through food shortages, collapse of the supply chain, everything they effectuated with the COVID-19 bioweapons release, and then you throw the banking sector implosion. The world financial system is set to implode in an event that is going to make everything that ever came before in the way of financial crisis look like an absolute pittance, and it's irretrievable and unavoidable at this point. And that's coming from somebody who told you when oil was still at $32 to $36 a barrel that we were headed back to $150 a barrel oil and possibly $200 a barrel oil by the end of Joe Biden's first term in office. $200 a barrel oil and $10 gasoline, I predicted that in April of 2021, just about a year ago. I told you right here on these airwaves that we were headed for $150 to $200 oil and $10 gasoline under the policies of the Great Reset and everything that they were doing to shut down supply. And all of this is artificial scarcity, and this is what is so maddening about the realization. See, we elect an outsider in Donald Trump in 2016, and it becomes so patently obvious that the elites and the elected political class in the United States had deliberately been sabotaging every single economic lever, creating crises, creating scarcity, creating expensive energy, that everything was an artificial construct. The lack of wage growth, the lack of salary growth, all of these things that we'd been told were just the new normal, lack of economic growth, GDP growth rate, 1% if we were lucky on a quarterly basis. Barack Obama famously telling the world that, well, he didn't know what kind of magic wand Donald Trump would have because there was no such thing and would never be such a thing as 3% quarterly growth rate in the United States. We'd never have a 3% GDP growth rate in America ever again. That according to Barack Obama. Lo and behold, Donald Trump gets into office and just starts to flip the levers and punch the buttons to reset, give us a systems reset on the free market capitalist system. What remains of it? After these decades of sabotage and deliberate destruction of the system that have been undertaken by the globalists and by the corporatocracy that's destroying mom and pop Main Street while empowering and enriching corporate entities and international corporations in the same breath and in the same policies. The venting of 70,000 factories from the United States during that time. And it became readily obvious that our rulers had been, now you and I knew all of this, but it became obvious even to the uninitiated masses that the ruling class had been deliberately short-circuiting, destroying, and sabotaging the economic potential of the nation, and that we had been suffering unnecessarily under the lash of not just incompetence, but of deliberate sabotage of the airplane of American commerce. As Rush Limbaugh used to say, the airplane wants to fly, and if you just get off, if you just let it fly, if you just set it properly and trim it properly to allow it to fly, it is going to fly under its own volition because that's what a free market capitalist society is meant to do. And they had all the settings gunked up and effed up to the point that the airplane of commerce in the United States was ready to crash into the ground. Donald Trump came back and gave us the briefest of pauses and reprieves from that destination. And Joe Biden, after they steal the election in 2020, use the COVID-19 bioweapons release to bring us back under heel and back under thumb, initiate the Great Reset. We are now skyrocketing. We are ready to auger in. We're flying. The airplane is now flying straight down with very little possibility for reprieve. We are ready to auger in, baby, on this impact, and they have everything set to absolute self-destruct. And this is all illustrated by, even by the way that they talk about this situation in Russia and Ukraine. Let's play some more of this as Maria Salazar just continues to dig the hole deeper and deeper and deeper, revealing her true identity as this SJW race baiting. You fill in the blank. She is just absolutely off the rails in this conversation with Tucker Carlson. It was, frankly, it was a joy to watch, but it was also very difficult to be able to sit through at the same time, because it is maddening to see her try to spin this. It's just pick it up wherever it was.
Trig number 27.
I understand. We believe. But I'm just saying, right, I got okay, it. And so. I'm as against communism, I think, as anybody. But my question is, if we are providing weapons to one side in a war, I think it's fair to ask, maybe the other side would say that's an act of war against us. And if that happens, then what next? And to not think about that seems negligent. But since you're on the Foreign Affairs Committee, I know that you have thought it through. So tell me your views on what would happen next.
Tucker, we have been providing javelins and stingers and ammunition, and we're providing a lot of military armament. So what is the difference between that and the MiGs and the S-300s? What's the difference? I mean, Putin, you have to understand that we are, unfortunately, the United States has fallen into the Vladimir Putin's trap. He is the one dictating what we're going to do, what we're not going to do. He said, we do not want, we are imposing a no-fly zone over Ukraine, and we are
abiding by it. So we're letting Putin control our behavior. Okay, so that seems like a loss right there. Right. Okay, but let me just ask you, because we believe we don't need more evidence that Putin has bad intent, that he's evil. A lot of people believe he's crazy, including some informed people, including many Russians. So we know he's volatile, and we know that he's heavily. How many nuclear weapons, by the way, does Russia have? Do you know?
Many.
Many.
Only
about 6,000
is
the guess. One is enough, and that's a fair. That's a fair answer.
One is enough.
So are we concerned at all that he might use a nuclear weapon.
That bears repeating and highlighting. He asked her how many nuclear weapons. If you're going to be on the Foreign Affairs Committee of the United States Congress, it might help to know what the offensive capability of the second most nuclear potent nation on the planet. It might help to know what their capacity and capability is. If you're going to be sitting on the Foreign Affairs Committee in the United States Congress, and then. Passionately and persuasively engaging on a policy piece that may or may not involve pulling the United States thread by tendril into a widening war that could lead us to the destruction of the planet. It might be important to know how many nuclear weapons Russia has. I could be wrong about that, but it's just illustrating the ignorance and something that's purely driven by emotion, absolutely not a single shred of logic in anything that Maria Salazar talks about in this exchange.
Against the United States. Is that a concern? Is that something that you consider as you recommend these policies?
Of course. We're very concerned. And we're also concerned that he may be throwing a biological weapon against the Ukrainians within the next few hours because he cannot take Kyiv as he thought he was going to. So of course that we are in confronting a dictator. But I think that we should put this into context, and I thank you very much that you're giving me the opportunity.
Of course.
If we believe in the free world that this is just going to be the first or the last confrontation with a bad actor, we're in for a very big surprise. Because if we do not confront bad actors with strength, then we're going to have China and Russia and Iran and Fidel and you and Venezuela and Nicaragua.
But needless to say, I've made that argument, you know, for 30 years on television. The question is, are we doing it with all available risks known to the population in whose name we're doing it? So I'm asking you, what do you think the chances are? And I'm sure you've gamed this out as a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee, that Putin uses a nuclear weapon against the United States in response to this. What would you calculate the chances?
Sure that we are taking that into consideration.
But what do you think the likely? I mean, obvious. Our viewers are, I'm sure, supporting you. I think most conservatives are on your side. But I just think they should know what the informed view of the likelihood of a retaliatory nuclear strike from Vladimir Putin is. What would you assess it as being?
And I repeat, that's a hypothetical question, and I believe...
It's hardly a hypothetical.
Yeah, she said it. She said that about 36 times during the course of the interview. This isn't as interesting simply from finding out that there's absolutely nothing between the ears of Maria Salazar. It's interesting in realizing the formulation of policy in Washington, D.C., the susceptibility of the emotional argument in virtually every sector of the electorate, and what that predicts about long-term chances for survival and even species preservation on the planet. If we're going to be making hard and fast policy decisions based on nothing except the easily parsed and parroted propaganda of emotionalism, we may as well just push the launch button now. Because it's going to happen sooner rather than later. If we're governed by people as unserious, unstudied, and ill-prepared as this, God help us. This is a Darwinian principle waiting to be enacted. It's not just survival of the fittest; it's survival of the smartest. We as a human race are failing that intelligence test on a daily basis. Maria Salazar is walking proof. Now, if you're a neoconservative nincompoop who believes that getting into a shooting war with Russia doesn't lead straight to nuclear war, well, I guess you can run for Congress. Because that's the kind of people, from Lindsey Graham to Maria Salazar, even the Republicans are vacuous, vapid, and utterly neophyte and out to lunch on what this actually means. Chad Olson Show, SOS Radio Network.
He will not take that step if starting today the Biden administration will send the message that we are in charge, that NATO is ready to confront him, and so are we. And that is the problem that I believe, I'm not sure if you share in my view, that you obtain peace, you obtain this, they take the all the power away.
This is the SOS Radio Network. SOS.